Welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 52. My name is Tom Cagley, and together we'll explore the varied worlds of software process improvement and measurement on the Spamcast. The cast will cover topics that deal with the challenges of how work is done in information technology organizations as they grow and evolve. The show will combine commentaries, interviews, your feedback to serve up ideas, opinions, options, advice, and even occasionally facts. In a nutshell, the cast provides advice for and from practitioners, methodologists, pundits, and consultants. Show 52 is an interview with Lisa Crispin, discussing her book, co-authored with Janet Gregory, Agile Testing, A Practical Guide for Testers in Agile Teams. We explored what agile testing is, how it helps teams, and how it's different than non-agile testing. The essay is titled, A Really Simple Checklist for Change Readiness Assessment, Part 2. Planning for change is not very different from planning a vacation. The checklist will remind you of the big things to remember that sometimes get forgotten when dealing with the details of making change actually happen. Remember that part one of the essay was originally uploaded with Spamcast 51. We conclude with information on a few upcoming conferences and notes on upcoming casts. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-61111. Program that number into your cell phone. Call early and often. Email addresses, Twitter IDs can be found in the show notes. Some disclaimers during the interviews. The views expressed by my interviewees are theirs and theirs alone, no matter how wonderful they are. The views and opinions expressed by me are mine and do not represent those of my employers or other third parties. However, if you'd like to borrow my views and opinions, I am always happy to share with a little attribution. The essay is titled A Really Simple Checklist for Change Readiness Assessment, Part 2. Planning for change is not very different from planning a vacation. The checklist will remind you of the big things to remember that sometimes get forgotten when dealing with the details of actually making change happen. Remember that part one was originally uploaded in Spamcast 51 and that the text of the whole essay can be found at www.tcagley.wordpress.com. A Really Simple Checklist for Change Readiness Assessment, Part 2. The first plan I recommend building is an Organizational Change Management Plan, an OCMP. The OCMP is a means to frame how your project is going to transform the organization today into the future state. The Organization Change Management Plan will integrate the project's roles and responsibilities with requirements for communication, training, oversight, reporting, and strategies to address resistance and reinforcement activities. We will address concepts of organizational change management in an essay later in 2009. The OCMP is a mixture of a high-level map and a how-to document that is critical to ensure you are focused on how you are going to change the organization's culture as well as the tasks required to define and implement specific processes. Finally, you will need a tactical plan that lays out the tasks you need to accomplish and the order the tasks need to be done. The focus and breadth of the tactical plan you use will be different depending on the project management technique you use. For example, if you use a time box technique like Scrum, your tactical plan will focus on identifying tasks for the current sprint based on the backlog of items required to reach your goal. Regardless of the planning technique used, a sprint backlog or a detailed project schedule, you must have a tactical plan or risk falling into random activity. Use the technique that conforms to your organization's needs and your organization's culture. The bottom line is that you will need to understand the activities and the order they occur in to get to your goal. Change is difficult to accomplish in the best of times, and almost impossible if you fail to properly start. The simple checklist for change readiness described in this paper was developed and compiled to help you focus on a set of topics that need to be considered when beginning any process improvement project. Are there other areas that should be on the list? Can each topic area be decomposed into finer levels of granularity? I believe the answer is certainly, and I would urge you to augment and decompose the list further to share your results. In any case, a checklist that focuses you on getting your sponsorship, goals, budget, and plans in order can only help you start well. Comments, corrections, new items to put on the list, all welcome. Please feel free to comment on the show note blog or to add information at my blog at www.tcagley.wordpress.com. Remember that part one of a really simple checklist for change readiness assessment was originally uploaded on the Software Process and Measurement Cast number 51. Check it out. The interview in the Software Process and Measurement Cast 52 is with Lisa Crispin. Lisa is an Agile testing coach and practitioner. She's the co-author with Janet Gregory of Agile Testing, a practical guide for testers in Agile teams, Addison Wesley, 2009. It's the focus of the interview, by the way. She specializes in showing testers in Agile teams how testers can add value and how to guide development with business-facing tests. Her mission is to bring Agile joy to the software testing world and testing joy to the Agile development world. Lisa joined her first Agile team in 2000, having enjoyed many years working as a programmer, analyst, tester, and QA director. Since 2003, she's been a tester on a Scrum XP team at ePlan Services. She frequently leads tutorials, workshops on Agile testing at conferences in North America and Europe. Lisa regularly contributes articles about Agile testing to publications such as the Better Software Magazine, IEEE Software, and Methods and Tools. Lisa co-authored Testing Extreme Programming, again, Addison Wesley 2002, with Tip House. For more information about Lisa and Lisa's work, visit www.lisacrispin.com. Ready to get agile with your testing? It's time for the interview. Lisa Crispin, welcome to the Software Process and Measurement Cast.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Lisa, you are the co-author with Janet Gregory of Agile Testing, a Practical Guide for Testers and Agile Teams, Addison Wesley 2009. Actually, it's while your website says pre-order, it doesn't say that on Amazon anymore, so it must be out.
It's out. That's true. I haven't updated my website, I guess.
Let's begin with, how is testing different between Agile and non-Agile projects and then teams?
I think the biggest difference with between Agile and non-Agile is that with an Agile team, the entire development team is concerned with testing and quality. Where in traditional projects, people tend to think, well, the QA team or the testing team, they're going to take care of testing, they're going to manage the quality, and the developers just write code. With an Agile team, everyone starts with the idea of, we want to produce high quality code, high quality software, good business value, and we know we need to do testing to do that and use tests to do that. So how do we approach that? And so they're thinking about testing from day one.
So once upon a time in my lifetime, I was a tester and then ran a test group. We always felt that developers weren't really great testers. Is that because we had built a Chinese wall in between ourselves? Or are there attributes of a good tester, a good agile tester, that are not always there in a developer?
Well, you know, when Agile started out, extreme programming started out in the late 90s, there was really a feeling that among the people practicing it back then, you know, the developers are doing test-driven development. They're using these unit and component tests to help guide their coding. And gosh, we'll get the customers to do the testing, the other testing, and we don't really need testers. But they quickly found out that there is a set of skills and a mindset that most professional testers have, or at least that good professional testers have, that really does add value, and it's hard for a team to succeed without it. So you really need both. You need the developer skills around, they use their tests more to make sure their code is designed well and that their architecture works. And testers can help them use tests to know what they should code. So they've got their own tests to know that they've coded something in a good way, but testers can help them use business-facing tests to make sure that they're coding what the business really wants, that they're coding the right thing, not just the right way. And you really need a mix of skills. And of course, I do know developers who are good testers, and I know testers who are good developers, but in general, developers tend to be focused on delivering the piece of code they're working on right now. That's got to be their focus for them to be successful. Testers tend to be more focused on the big picture of how does this story we're working on, or how does this feature set we're working on right now fit into the bigger thing, bigger picture? How is it going to affect other parts of the application? How is it going to affect users? Is it delivering the business value that our customers are looking for? So there are different viewpoints, different perspectives.
So is that the mindset difference, or is there more to the mindset difference than the big picture kind of scenario?
I think another part of the mindset difference is that, in my experience, and this is a vast generalization, but this is just my experience, that programmers tend to be optimistic. And, you know, they have to be optimistic. They have to believe that they're going to write code that works. Where testers tend to take, a more negative view of what could go wrong and how can we make sure it doesn't go wrong. So we not only think about desired behavior of a system, we think about the undesired behavior of a system. That makes us ask questions that programmers may not think of. For example, testers, in my experience, are much more likely to say, well, okay, here are all the functional requirements that you have, but what about security? What about performance? How quickly does this report need to come up, or how quickly does this UI need to respond? And how important is usability? Should we be looking at using Ajax to give a better user experience and a faster response? Or can we go with something simple so that we don't have problems with different browser versions? And, you know, how's this going to scale? Kind of non-functional concerns that aren't directly involved with actually writing the code right now.
So if they take this more pragmatic or negative or sort of what can go wrong look at the world, how does a good agile tester make sure that doesn't run amok and get overly focused on what can go wrong? Or is there no end to that?
Well, that's a good question. I guess you could, you sure don't want to be totally negative all the time. And the big thing you want to watch out for as a tester on an agile team is, you know, lots of us back in earlier times of testing, we saw ourselves as kind of the quality policeman or the quality conscience of the team. And, you know, oh, we're going to keep that bad code from getting into production. And that's not the right way to approach Agile. With Agile, it's like, how can we help the team? We're all looking at the same goal. We're all wanting to deliver a good product. And how can we do that? So we definitely need to be positive in that way. You know, we can't stand in front of the train and say, well, stop, I don't think this is good enough quality. We have to really help our customers, our business experts, identify the quality that they're looking for. And that includes the negative aspects of it. That includes, you know, in the real business world, if you release a new product and it makes a bad impression on people, you're kind of sunk right then. And so a lot of projects, you really do have to think about those more negative aspects of what adverse impact could this have on the system.
How do you want practitioners to actually use this book? Is it a reference manual? Do you think they'll read it front to cover, or it will be one of those things that travels with them in terms of defining how testing will be done on any individual project?
Well, we wrote it with the intention that you wouldn't have to read it cover to cover, that you could go to the part of the book that made the most sense. Our target audience was testers and test managers who are new to Agile development. They know a lot about testing, but they don't know a lot about testing on an Agile team and how Agile development works. And so a lot of the difficulties that testers have is transitioning to Agile. A lot of development teams say, oh, goody, we're going to start doing Agile, and the programmers get trained in test-driven development and refactoring, and the project managers all get sent to Scrum Master School, but nobody really does anything with the testers, and they expect that they'll just figure things out. And then they're surprised that their testers either resist and say, well, we're not playing your game. We're going to keep doing what we've been doing, or they quit. And so we really want to help people see that Agile development, in fact, it's all about quality. And so it's something that testers should love. That's what I got into Agile development, because I could see the potential for a little tester utopia where everyone on the team is always thinking about testing and testability and quality. So there are different sections of the book. Their first section just kind of explains the basics of what we see, you know, how our Agile testers different, what makes an Agile tester, what is Agile testing. Then we go into some of the cultural and organizational challenges that we've seen over and over with different teams. And we've interviewed a lot of teams for this book, and their stories are in the book too, of, you know, here are some real life examples of the problems people had and how they worked around them in their transition to Agile. And then one of the big core parts of the book is based on Brian Merrick's Agile testing quadrants. And a lot of people scratch their heads and say, wow, testing is pretty vast. What kinds of testing do we need to do? Who should do them? When should they do them? And how does that fit into, you know, 2-week iterations? So with those Agile testing quadrants are a tool that we use to help with test planning and test execution, know which tools that you need, know the expertise and the skills you need on your team and who can do what. And then the last section of the book is a lot of people wonder, well, what does a tester do throughout an iteration of a project? What do you do the first few days before there's anything to test? How can you write executable tests before the code is written? And How can you keep testing from being squeezed into the last day of a 2-week iteration? And what about the traditional practices that testers have always been involved with in traditional projects, such as compliance with audit requirements, you know, Sarbanes-Oxley, CMMI, compliance with different frameworks like that, defect tracking? Where do all these things testers have always been involved with fit in? So that's what we kind of go in this iteration of a life of an Agile tester section. We try to go into, we follow a tester through an iteration and through a release and see, you know, how do we handle the end game where we're trying to get the software release out and we have to deal with our packaging and our delivery and beta testing and different activities like that. And then the very end of the book, you know, we're hoping some people might pick up the book and turn to the last chapter, which is what we consider to be the 7 key success factors for doing a good job with testing on an Agile team. And that's kind of an overview of the book. And then from there, you can dig into the different parts of the book to learn more about those key factors.
So many organizations, whether they're trying Agile, I think you hit the nail on the head, really tend to avoid talking about testing. You're right. They send people off to be trained, and the testers may or may not be included in that. Where organizations have put up a wall between testing and development, what would be the one piece of advice other than inclusion that you'd give to somebody to knock that wall down and make it work?
You've really got to instill in the whole team that, aren't we all concerned? You know, don't you want to do a good job? Don't you want to deliver a good product? And the truth is, everybody does. Nobody on a development team wants to deliver, you know, bugs to production. And so I think it's starting giving that team the empowerment to say, okay, you know, we're going to let you self-organize. If your commitment is to delivering high quality, how are you going to do that? You're going to need all these different roles on your team. So you're going to need to start looking at how you're going to change your process. And the big piece of advice I give people is use retrospectives and use them often. So make your iteration short. And at the end of every iteration, look at what went well and what didn't go so well, and see what the team can think of to change that. If you need more time for training, more time to learn, that's a good investment, and you need to take that time, and managers need to be aware that they need to provide that kind of support. So it's taking the time, being patient. Don't, you know, take the baby steps. Don't think it's going to all happen at once. It's going to take months or maybe even years to really get traction on this thing. And don't beat yourself up if you don't do it well. Just look for a better way to do it. And that goes beyond just the software development team. We're all part of a business. We're all part of an organization that needs to be successful. So don't build walls anywhere. If you're on an engineering team or a software development team, you need to learn about the business. And then you need to educate the business on what you can do for them and what you need from them in order to make that happen.
So what do you think the central message of the book that you and your co-author wanted to say to testers?
Just have courage. And be willing to go and ask your team to help you address these testing issues and help you figure out how the whole team can deliver a quality product. It's scary for testers to be thrust into this new role. And, you know, a lot of testers aren't used to talking with anybody outside of their group, whether it's business customers or software developers. So it's, you know, get some courage, get out of your comfort zone, get up and, you know, get up out of your chair, quit waiting for something to just be delivered to you for testing, and go see what you can do to help your team, and go ask your team to help you. Most people are willing to help. They just need to know what you want. So it's just trying to give people a little extra bravery to go do that.
So would the message be the same if a developer picked up the book? What would be the central message that you would want them to take away?
Pretty much the same thing. How can you help your testers be successful? How can you help your team be successful at testing? And like I say, I don't know any developers that want defects to go out to production. Another thing I've seen developers struggle with on agile teams is, you know, yeah, they're doing test-driven development. They might even be doing a good job of it. But still, when they deliver the software, the customer says, well, that's not really what I wanted. And they get frustrated because they need, you know, that's the biggest problem is trying to understand the requirements. And so the message to developers is, you know, you've got this hidden resource here of testers that have skills you may not be aware of. They're really good at talking to the customers and getting examples of how the system should work or how the system should not work. And they're really good at turning those into executable tests that will help you understand what to code. So let's start working together. Collaboration is a good thing. And I've been pleased to see that software developers have found that the book's relevant to them as well. Not it's to programmers as well as to testers, and hopefully to development managers as well, to say, I'm managing a development team. How can I work with the QA team? And maybe how can we merge these teams, at least virtually?
You've written two books now. What's your next book about?
Well, after the first book, I said I'd never write another one. And so I learned never to say never. It's a whole lot of work. And as a person with a full-time job, as well as all these extracurricular activities, doing tutorials and presenting at conferences and coaching teams, that keeps you pretty busy. But the reason that we wrote the book is just because we had something to say. That's, you know, I learned that from Mike Cohn. That's the main reason to write a book. And because we see Janet and I have seen testers struggling over the years, and we know it doesn't have to be that way. It's not that hard. These problems aren't that hard to fix. And so we're just going to, both of us are continuing on to not only spread the word about the book in hopes that it'll help people. And we're really happy to see more books coming out on agile testing and testing in general. So that's really great. But to continue to get out and talk to testers and talk to teams and help them understand that there's a whole lot better way of doing this. When I started with extreme programming years ago, and I was like, wow, this is the way to be a tester. This is a little utopia of everybody's helping me do a good job with testing. Everybody on the team's helping with automation. They're designing the code for testability. They're thinking all the time of, oh, that didn't go so well. What could we do better? This is wonderful. And so part of the reason I wanted to spread agile development around was, you know, just for so that those of us who liked it would have job opportunities. And now that it's really becoming more mainstream, it's really great to see that. I want to help that go on. My ultimate goal, and this is something Kent Beck told me years ago, that he hoped that someday people wouldn't call it extreme programming or any label like that. It would just be the way we develop software. And of course, some of us old timers know that we've been doing some of these things that are now called you know, agile practices. Some of us have been doing those for a long time. And so that's my goal, is for everyone to see this is just a good way to develop software. And every team needs to figure out on their own what works for them. We've tried in the book to not say, well, you have to go through these exact steps. Kool-Aid drinking isn't a good thing. Your team really needs to sit down and figure out what works for you. And that's not, you know, nobody else can say that's good or bad. Only you can judge if it's working for your team. So I hope to keep writing articles and blogging and getting out to conferences and getting out to companies that need help to just keep that going. I've seen a huge rise in the level of sophistication of testing on agile teams and the level of sophistication of testers of understanding practices like continuous integration, getting those implemented on their teams. Test-driven development, acceptance test-driven development is really catching on, and that's really exciting to see. So I'm really enjoying being part of this movement to get better value out there for businesses.
Lisa, you wake up tomorrow morning and you find that you have the power to fix any two things in the IT world. What would you change and why?
That would be nice to have that power. One thing I would change is to focus management into delivering business value instead of fighting over their own little power wars. Oh, I've got this team here and I've got this many people on the team, and by golly, I'm keeping them all. I'm not giving them to your team, and you're going to follow my rules or I'm not going to play. I'd like for people to really take a step back and think of more lean development practices to say, hey, let's eliminate waste. Let's deliver value. Let's focus on our customers and what helps them out. And, you know, we're all in this together. It's not productive to think about separate teams. And let's just make a whole paradigm shift with that. And I guess the other thing is to understand that it's really all about testing. If we can use examples and tests to drive our development, we're going to save a lot of time and come a lot closer to delivering what our customers want. And I like people to open their eyes to that to on all sides and to realize there are a lot of different roles involved in software development. And of course, I'm talking about testers, but we also need analysts and technical writers and database experts and usability experts and lots of different expertise on a team. But we all need to learn those skills. I'm a generalist, and while we need some specialization, I think the more all of us understand other roles and understand other skills and know when they're needed, the better off we'll all be.
Thank you for doing an interview for the Software Process and Measurement Cast. A couple of quick things before we wrap. Lisa, if people want to get in touch with you, where would they find you on the web?
LisaChrisman.com is my website, and you can find my contact information there. And I try to blog every few days. I'm always getting good ideas from other people or good ideas from my own team. Interesting aha moments that I try to pass on to other people through my blog, and also to give links to new tools. I was just at the Austin workshop on test automation this weekend and learned a lot about some really great new test libraries and test frameworks that are out there. And so that's something I'll be putting links on my site about. So there's always something new to learn, and I'm just there to help other people find the same things I'm running across.
Super, and we'll have all those contact information in your website in the show notes. Part of the deal with the Software Process and Measurement Cast is you've shared a lot of good information with my listeners. The floor is open for you to promote anything that you'd like.
Oh, well, good. There's a good open space conference coming up in April in Minneapolis, the Continuous Integration and Testing Conference. And I would urge anybody interested in testing and continuous integration to attend. It's free, so it's only the cost of your travel to Minneapolis. And I went to the one last year in Denver, and it's one of the best conferences I've ever been to look at tools and find out how other people are doing testing, different testing practices, different approaches. So I'll plug that. And also, I'd like to plug the Agile 2009 conference. We're open for submissions. And I'm the producer of the testing stage. So we're looking for good experience reports on testing, things that you've done that's worked for your team that you'd like to share, or things that didn't work that you want to tell people to avoid. Tutorials, hands-on sessions, workshops, any kind of session that you can think of basically that's related to testing. Go out to the agilealliance.org site, and there'll be a link there to the conference.
Super. And obviously the book, right?
Well, and obviously the book. So I hope everybody will look for the book. It is out. Unfortunately, this is a terrible thing in a testing book. They had a manufacturing problem with the book. So I want to caution everybody that as soon as you get your book, look through it and make sure all the pages are there and none of them are repeated. And if you get a bad book, contact me and I will get you a good book. That's an embarrassing thing to happen to a testing book. And the irony was not lost on the manufacturer either. So that we think there may have been a couple of hundred books involved out of 3,000. So I want to let everyone know about that. But I'm also eager to hear from people, feedback on the book. Did it help you? We'd love to see people review it on Amazon, good or bad, because we really want to understand what things are helping people and what things aren't, so that we can change our message in the future to be more helpful and provide what people need.
Lisa Crispin, co-author with Janet Gregory of Agile Testing, A Practical Guide for Testers and Agile Teams, Addison Wesley, 2009. Thank you very much for spending a good 25 minutes with us today.
Thank you. It's been fun. It's always fun to talk about testing and agile development.
This segment of Spamcast features appearances, presentations, news, and comments. On March 4th, 2009, I'll be doing a webinar with ZAI's IT Metrics Productivity Institute. The webinar is titled Using Functional Metrics in Agile Estimation. It'll be at 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I hope you're looking forward to that. I am definitely looking forward to doing that. A synopsis of the webinar is many Agile implementations rely solely on individual expertise and experience with applications as the primary input into the estimation process. While expertise and experience is good stuff, it is not sufficient to avoid the sort of limiting paradigm that using just experience gives you. This webinar will focus on two case studies using functional metrics, if pug function point based, as a discipline sizing technique leveraged in the XP planning game and the Scrum sprint planning session. The next Software Process and Measurement Cast will feature an interview with Capers Jones discussing a wide range of software metrics topics. Capers is always exciting to talk to. I think you'll find this interview very informative. Listen to it. Listen to it with a friend. Send a friend the interview, but don't miss it. One more item. My father has begun to podcast his fiction at www.talesbytom.com. Yours truly is doing the production work. Feel free to check it out and give him some feedback. I've been creating a Facebook page for the Software Process and Measurement Cast. Check it out, add a comment, a picture, become a fan. Your thoughts and comments are always a welcome addition. Remember, all Spamcast episodes are available. If you have issues downloading any one of them, let me know. I'll help you through that. Contact Spamcast at spamcastinfo@gmail.com. Voice messages can be left at 1-206-888-6111. It's my intent to share all emails, voice messages, Twitters. The Spamcast blog and show notes can be found at www.spamcast.net. One final request. I'm still looking for reviews on iTunes or on Podcast Alley. Please help me out with a review. I would certainly be appreciative. The music on Spamcast is made available by the PodSafe Music Network at www.podshow.com. The featured song is by 2012 and is titled Last Battle. Information on the band can be found at www.myspace.com/2012vision.com. 2012 does an incredible job with experimental electronica. Be sure to support 2012 and all PodSafe artists. Spamcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 2.5 license. Remember, If process improvement is a never-ending journey, why do so many people ask, when will we arrive? See y'all in 2 weeks. Thank you.